Hi, welcome back to Into the Bullpen. I'm your host, Casey Gray, and today I have my second guest on the podcast, and I'm super excited to introduce one of my very closest friends, Mackenzie Grindy. What is up?
Hello.
So, Kinsey and I have been best friends for about, I think it's like 8 years now, and Kinsey is the kind of person where if I'm ever in trouble, it is either for or with her. Yeah, we've gotten through a lot of stuff together. We've been through some shit. So, Kinsey, why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about you?
I think I'll start with me, and then I'll kind of transition to us.
Sure.
Well, I graduated college with a degree in psychology.
Nice.
And my biology, of course.
Nice. And so, tell us why you got those degrees. What are you planning to do with your degrees?
So I want to be a doctor quite badly. So I'm taking an MCAT, which is a medical entrance exam for school. And I take that sometime soon here. So I'm just setting up for that and renovating a house, hanging out, doing my thing. Sweet. On a podcast with you.
Woohoo!
So now we'll move on to us and our juicy, juicy friendship.
So juicy.
Casey and I actually met because we were fighting over a very skinny boy. I will not mention any names.
No, we don't.
They still live in the area.
We don't name drop.
So Casey and I have been through, like she said, a lot of together, but we've also been through a lot of really fun times. I worked at the hospital when she delivered her baby, and I got to come after my shift and hold her.
And you also had to like force feed me because I hadn't eaten in like days.
Yeah. I brought Casey food, and I was like, "Eat this cheeseburger right now, or so help me God."
And you're like, "Eat the f***ing brownie, Casey."
Yeah, just eat it. It's the best thing that there is. Just eat it. And I got to hold her daughter in the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
And was super, super ecstatic about that. Because I got to watch Casey grow up from her little 16-year-old self and be a mom and now a wife.
Ooh,
ooh. So, yeah, we've been through a lot together and here we are.
All right, now Kinsey doesn't know anything about this case. Kinsey, tell us what, like, how much you know about, like, criminal justice and crime.
So, from, like, I don't know how you'd say it. I like the movies, you know, right. Like, I'll watch Cops Till the Sun Goes Down. But
sure.
I don't really know anything you about criminal know. Justice, if gotcha. I'm honest. Cool. My only run-in is I was in a car accident and got charged with a ticket, and then my cop didn't show up to my court proceedings, so the case got dropped. Like, that's it. That's all I got.
I remember that day. Dude, you were so nervous about that.
So sweaty. Not well.
It's all right, though. It's all right. It's not on your record anymore.
It's fine.
We are not going to waste any more time. We're going to get right into this case. Here we go.
This is the unsolved murder of Ricky McCormick.
On June 30th, 1999, police in St. Charles County, Missouri, got a phone call. This phone call was from a woman who stated she had been driving on Route 367 when she spotted a body in a field. Just casual.
Okay. Happens every day.
Yeah. So the police are actually pretty familiar with the area, the specific spot. It's actually a ditch next to a field. But the specific location was actually known to be used for dumping bodies before and after this case.
Okay, so at what point do we decide to, like, maybe put up a barricade?
Or, like, yeah, something we need to do. Something has to be done.
Like a no dumping body sign?
No dumping. So when police arrive on the scene, the body is already at least partially decomposed. The man is wearing blue Lee jeans. I don't know what that is. But he's also wearing a plain white t-shirt. So police sifted through missing person files looking for a similar description as their victim, but they came up empty-handed. According to one source, quote, "The flesh on his outstretched hands has already rotted to the point that his fingertips, just below the top knuckles, had fallen off and lay next to him in the weeds."
Okay.
Nice, great.
Do you know by chance how long it takes for, like, decomp? Because it really doesn't take long.
Well, also, they're in Missouri.
Yes, it's hot.
And it's June.
So,
it's really hot.
Ew, okay.
Yeah, so they ended up being able to run his fingerprints. I don't really know how, but came back as a partial print to a 41-year-old St. Louis man, Ricky McCormick. Have you heard of this case?
I have never heard of this case before.
Okay, good. So
it's really old.
Yeah, it's pretty old. And it's, we'll get to that. But it's old. So St. Louis from the area where he was found was about 15 to 20 miles. One thing police noticed almost immediately was that it seemed as though Ricky was homeless. At least he didn't have a permanent address. He had had multiple addresses in his life and is also alleged to have lived on and off with his mother or his aunt, who went by the name of Cookie, between their houses in St. Louis. He had dropped out of high school and he was severely dyslexic. Now, I'm not sure if he dropped out because he was really dyslexic and it was really hard for him, or if he dropped out because maybe he got in trouble all the time or whatever. I don't really know.
I
just know.
I guess.
I know, right? But yeah, so he dropped out of high school. So he's not, I'm not saying that people who drop out of high school are never intelligent, but he was not very intelligent. His own mother is described as calling him retarded.
Oh, well, uneducated and...
Yeah. Some sources said that he had chronic heart and lung problems, and his cousin speculated that he may have been schizophrenic and bipolar as well.
This is like a trifecta for this poor guy.
I know. At the time of his death, Ricky McCormick worked at the Amoco gas station. It is also reported that basically his entire work history was odd jobs, like janitor, dishwasher, that kind of stuff. According to most sources, he preferred to work at night and mostly kept to himself. So he had kind of a reputation as a loner, and some people called him like a vampire.
Yeah, I suppose because during the night, like, less customers, you don't have to interact really with many, if any.
Right.
Especially like a janitor job, so.
So Ricky McCormick was actually no stranger to police either. 7 years before his body was found in the ditch, McCormick was arrested and charged with sexual abuse because he had been in a relationship with a girl who was not even 14, and he would have been 34 at the time. And that's not even the worst of it. Are you ready for this, Kinsey?
Okay, ready.
He got her pregnant twice before the age of 14.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for this guy in the beginning. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Take it back. So, do you think because of this case kind of reminds me of like the whole Gypsy Blanchard type thing for some reason? I'm not sure why.
I totally get the vibes that you're feeling. I totally get that vibe. So his mom didn't really have anything to do with his treatment and his care. A lot of his care was his own choice. Like, you'll see later in the story, he just like goes to the emergency room. He's like, oh, you know, emergency room. I don't know. But
we'll see, find out more.
Yeah. According to some reports, Ricky had been, I mean, let's just say it as it is, raping this girl since she was 11.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So after he was arrested, he was deemed fit for trial after being evaluated by a psychiatrist, where he then pleaded guilty and proceeded to serve only 1 year of his 3-year sentence before he was let out.
Bye-bye. Why was he let out? Does it say?
No, probably good behavior, but I know, depending on what state, obviously this is Missouri, but I don't know anything about Missouri laws, but depending on the state, a lot of correction systems will let inmates out if they have good behavior and they serve, I can't remember what it's like 60% of their sentence or, but each state is different and have their own correction laws. Like in New Mexico, the prison I worked at, they had to serve 3/4 of the sentence. The autopsy on Ricky McCormick came back as undetermined because, as graphic as this is, not much of him survived the elements. It was determined, however, that despite his advanced decomposition, he likely had only died 3 days prior to being found.
You know, I just, when I hear that, and then his autopsy comes back as inconclusive, but they somehow still got a partial print.
I know, right? I don't know how that happened.
That's tricky.
But, I mean, his fingertips fell off.
Yeah. So, like, were they just laying there? And then, oh, look here. Another.
Ew, you know what I think about? It's like, I don't know how much of Bones. Have you ever seen the TV show Bones?
Yes.
Okay, so sometimes they have to use, like, fabric softener to restore the, like, moisture in the skin. And then somebody had to, like, put the skin on to get, like, a print. And I'm wondering if they had to do that now.
Ooh.
Ooh, right?
Good question. On another cute little token, not related to this story, Booth, her, like, boyfriend.
Yeah, Seeley.
So hot.
We
so,
love so Seeley hot. Booth. Yeah.
Oh, hello. Okay, anyway, back to the case.
Honestly, I could talk about Seeley Booth all day.
You want to?
I should, but that's not what people are here for. So initially, authorities were not really sure whether or not they believed foul play was involved. They thought it could have just been a homeless man dead in a field. He could have just fallen victim to the elements, right? Well, actually, no. They actually found that his body was in too much of an advanced stage of decomposition. And, like, it was hot during this time, yes, but apparently it was theorized that he had been kept in a hot shed or something similar for at least, like, a good chunk of time before he was dumped on that county road. That, to me, makes it pretty obvious that there's foul play.
Yes.
If you're in a shed and then you get somewhere else, you probably...
Mortem, yeah, I would almost assume that you didn't walk yourself.
Right. I mean, that'd be kind of odd.
Yeah.
So, additionally, when police get the victim's personal items from the medical examiner, they find something peculiar in Ricky's pocket. They find some notes, but at the time, they don't really think much of it. According to reports, authorities interviewed Ricky's friends, family, and his girlfriend Sandra, and they end up actually coming up with a lot of theories. But according to a rumor, because he was just basically a homeless African-American man, the police just didn't care enough to continue working on his case. So soon the case begins to run cold and then become even colder. And Ricky's case is soon added to the pile of unsolved cases, and nobody really ever thinks much of it until over a decade later.
Okay.
In early 2011, FBI officials went public with information from Ricky's case. Information, as far as I can tell, nobody knew had been passed on to the FBI. Information previously thought of as unimportant. And the FBI asks for the public's help. And here's what they said. Quote, despite extensive work by our Cryptanalysis and Racketeering Records Unit, or CRRU, as well as help from the American Cryptogram Association, the meanings of those two coded notes remain a mystery.
So they were coded.
They were coded. The notes in this man, who was severely dyslexic and allegedly could barely write his own name, were in code. And I want you to take into consideration one thing about this FBI CRRU unit. These are the same. This is the same unit that decoded Nazi spies' messages in World War II.
And then they find this one.
They can't figure out this guy's what he wrote. And a lot of people, like his family, his friends, Sandra, his girlfriend, they said that he could not write anything. Like, he could barely write his own name. So this man, who's basically illiterate, has these codes in his pocket that not even the FBI can figure out.
Supposedly, because they never tried.
This man, who had no vehicle, did not know how to drive, and who was found at least 15 miles from where he was living, or maybe not, we're not really sure, in an area far outside where public transportation went, was found with cryptic message in his pocket. According to the FBI, the notes were a combination of letters and numbers that it seems like nobody can figure out how to crack. So, I know.
Like his girlfriend or...
Okay, Kinsey, I want you to look at these notes and tell me what you see. Here's the first one.
Oh my. I mean, they're letters.
Right. And then here's the second.
They don't make any sense. Definitely a man's handwriting.
You think so?
And I wonder...
Oh, sorry.
I think so, kind of.
Oh yeah, I can see that for sure.
And then I'm wondering why the... So for you people that can't see it, there is these writings, presumably letters in code with dashes in between them, and there's almost circular blobs, like encoding, almost like it's like a sentence, like, okay, finish with that one, that's a thought, and then, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and these notes are also going to be on the Facebook page, so if you're not following that, go over there, look at it, you know the drill, whatever. But yeah, it's unreadable, right? Like, you had no idea what it said?
Completely unreadable, yeah. I have no clue. None of that made any sense to me.
I'm gonna read just, like, this, the first sort of line, okay? This one is ALPNTEGLSE-SE space ERTE. Or the T might also be a plus. Not sure. Unclear.
No, completely, yeah. No idea.
Right. So here's what the FBI has to say about this particular code. Quote, the characters are not random. There are many E's, for example, that could be used as a spacer. There are many characteristics that suggest it could be solved, many patterns. The problem is we don't know why it is not solvable. There's a lot of speculation that the code within these letters and numbers will be the big clue that gets authorities the information they need to solve this case. Others have suggested that these letters are actually not a code, but rather they are a dyslexic man writing out words.
Interesting.
The way they sound to him, yeah.
Okay.
Others have suggested the codes are absolutely nothing, or could be used to throw off the investigation, but the CRRU unit believes that these letters are not random and it's not gibberish. I want to pause really quickly to mention a discrepancy in a piece of information that I think is at least important to take into consideration. A few sources, and I will also mention that most of these sources are not necessarily the most reliable. Doesn't mean they're wrong. But a few sources mention that because Ricky was severely dyslexic and couldn't even write his own name, he would write notes to family and friends and even himself in a sort of code or secret language.
Now, so it's not like he's never tried to write down. See, you know, this is pertinent information, I think, because he's tried previously with others. Like, surely his girlfriend has some sort of writing of his, you know?
Right. But, okay, so I almost didn't even mention this because I couldn't find anything on what the codes or letters or whatever were like that he wrote or how they related to the code found in his pocket. I don't even know if there was, like, a handwriting analysis done where they compared something he may have written to this.
Right.
I don't know. I couldn't find any information. But, I mean, when they say that he wrote in code to his family and friends, that could be something like drawing a picture of a telephone on a sticky note as a reminder to call somebody that day.
Okay.
You know, so we don't really know exactly what this code or secret language he supposedly wrote was.
Right, because if he would have, then they probably would have done a handwriting analysis.
Right.
And, you know, if you've got somebody that can't read and can't write, I have kind of a hard time believing, like, the letter situation. You know what I mean?
Like, what do you mean? What letter situation?
Like, putting, like, writing down the letters, because then you kind of know how to write, maybe not in coherent sentences.
Right, right.
But being able to recognize and picking out E as a space, or maybe the E is like a, you know, a lot of words have silent E's at the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
E, you know, stuff like that. So, you know.
I totally see where you're coming from. I totally get it. Because if you remember, his own mom called him retarded and said that he couldn't even write his own name.
Right.
Which is why a lot of people are, including the authorities, there are speculating that this note, this cryptic note that he has in his pocket, probably leads to whoever he may have been meeting with or whoever he may have saw that day that ended up killing him. And maybe this person didn't know that he had these notes in his pockets. We don't really know. But like I said, I wanted to throw it out there. I don't know the relation to the codes found in his pocket. I don't even know if it's true. I just thought I would put the information out there, explain the circumstances surrounding the information, and let you guys decide whether or not you think it is relevant. So after the FBI finally went public with their request for help in 2011, they had to set up a special website in order to manage and sort the thousands of comments or theories that their request produced. According to an article by Alexander Trito, some of the suggestions that this site brought forth included VIN numbers, gambling cheats, or illicit drug transactions, among others.
Interesting.
The FBI was actually criticized for their release of the information too. Some people felt like they should focus more on the murder itself rather than the codes in his pocket.
I can see the point, but I don't know. Like you just said, it'd be a connection to whoever he was meeting or who murdered him.
Right. So, we don't know the relevance yet.
Right.
There's little to no forensic evidence found, or at least from what we know, any forensic evidence found by police has never been released publicly, so we just don't really know what forensic evidence they may have. But I think a lack of forensic evidence would make a good reason for the police to continue focusing on this note if they have nothing else to go on.
Right. Focus on what you have.
So one of the theories surrounding this case is that Ricky McCormick was shot by the owner of the gas station he worked at. If you remember, he worked at the Amoco gas station.
Okay. What was their beef? What was wrong with them?
I'll get to that in 1 second, because this one is kind of a doozy.
Okay.
So I scrolled through a Reddit post about this case as well, and honestly, there's a pretty large number of people who also think that this is the likely scenario, but I want to know what you think after I tell you all of it, Kinsey, okay?
Okay.
So the owner of the gas station at the time of Ricky's death was a Palestinian immigrant by the name of Juma Hamdallah, okay? 2 months after Ricky's death, police actually investigated the shooting of Juma's brother, Baha, who was also employed at the gas station.
Okay.
Baha survived the shooting and ended up not filing charges against Juma. While digging into the situation a little bit more, police uncovered a direct link between Baha and a gang in St. Louis that was said to have moved narcotics.
So this is the brother, correct?
Juma is the owner and Baha is more of like a manager at the gas station.
Okay.
So this isn't even the only instance of gun violence in this family. I'm a little fuzzy on some of these details, but apparently in 1997, which would have been 2 years prior to Ricky's death, Baha was arrested after a police officer watched him pull up next to a man in a car and just whip out a handgun and just bang, bang, bang.
Oh.
Yep.
No hiding from that.
Right. The man he was shooting at was not hit. Don't know how. It must be a terrible shot. But Baha's case was eventually dropped, although I couldn't figure out why. So he was never charged.
Oh.
Yeah. You watched him pull right up and just, oh, that's fine, I guess.
Oh, oops.
Finger must have slipped, you know how it goes.
Casual, yeah. Oh my gosh.
And then in 1998, Baha allegedly opened fire on another one of his brothers, Bajat. Okay, yep. Family beef. The two of them had gotten into an argument, to which Baha escalated and started shooting at Bajat. Bajat was hit in the abdomen. But several days later, he told police that he didn't know who his assailant was and even described his assailant as being a Hispanic man with facial hair. His report to police directly contradicts the reports from eyewitnesses, including a few who knew the brothers personally.
Oh my goodness.
So we don't really know why Bajat, and I might be saying his name right, wrong. I apologize if I'm saying it wrong. I am not sure. We don't know why Bajat decided to lie to the police and say he didn't know who his assailant was when many people watched his brother just, you know, pop, pop.
You know, if he's part of, or allegedly, excuse me, part of a gang, right?
Right.
You almost wonder what kind of things are held over those people's heads. You know, you see it all the time. I don't know if you've seen the show Narcos.
I've seen, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know if you ever remember, but there was one time when Pablo Escobar was going across and he clearly had illegal entities in a cube van, like a big truck,
mm-hmm.
almost like a U-Haul truck.
Sure.
And he had TVs in there, and you're supposed to pay, I guess, almost like a duty fee, almost like if you're going into Canada for these items.
Okay.
At the time, they were either manufactured in the U.S. or something, and whatever, blah, blah. So they had to go across this little place where there's a bunch of guards that would look through, you know, what you had, a border, more than likely. And when they crossed over, they said to him, you know that you have to pay duty on all of these items. You know that. You're not dumb. And then he finally blackmailed every single one of them, and they had never met Pablo before. So he looked at the one guard, and he said, how's your mom doing? I know that she just got out of the hospital.
Oh,
it would be a shame if something happened
snap.
To her. You know what I mean? So you almost wonder if in these sorts of situations, if that same thing almost happens, like they're getting blackmailed.
Right, if they threaten them.
Not police.
Sure.
What he looked like or else, really.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So who knows?
I don't know. But later that same week, Baja turned himself in, but Bajat insisted on not pressing charges, and the case was dropped.
So this is the second case this man has gotten away with.
Well, that's not even it. Less than a month later, police show up to the gas station and arrest Baja Hamdallah for second-degree assault. According to these reports, he had beaten a man with a rusty hammer. 2 weeks before this case against Baja went to court, the man was shot on a street just blocks away from the gas station. And with no victim, there was not really a case.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. According to Ricky's girlfriend, 2 weeks before he was killed, Ricky purchased a one-way ticket to Orlando, Florida. Apparently, Ricky made several trips similar to this one periodically through the year. We don't know much about this Florida trip except that he stayed at the Econo Lodge in room 280. That was in Orlando. Ricky called Sandra, his girlfriend, several times throughout this trip, and together the two of them called a bunch of numbers that police were never able to track.
Interesting.
So, what are we doing?
What's happening?
Right.
Okay.
So when police asked Sandra about this after Ricky's body was found, they asked her about the trip, and she explained that she had believed Ricky was transporting marijuana. She had also believed that Ricky would pick up and deliver packages in order to make money. Okay. So she had also said that she was stashing marijuana, the two of them. Occasionally, Ricky also lived with Sandra, but from what I understand, it wasn't a permanent thing.
So this Sandra, this is the girl that he went to jail over.
No. I don't. Actually, that's a good question. I don't believe so. I just know that this was his girlfriend at the
baby with.
No, but he also was the father of two other children in addition to the two children that he had with the 14-year-old. So, but yeah, no, this wasn't that same girl. Obviously, as far as we know, we don't know what that young girl's name was because that information couldn't be released from the court since she was a juvenile. But I can't imagine it would be that same girl.
Right, okay.
She had also stated that Ricky had become really erratic after he got back from this trip to Orlando and leading up to his death a few days later. Just 1 week prior to his body being found, Ricky McCormick was seen on camera for the last time ever. These cameras were in the Barnes Jewish Hospital emergency room. We know that McCormick had a history of heart and lung problems, and this visit was no exception. He came in complaining of chest pains and trouble breathing. He was admitted to the hospital and ended up staying for 2 days for observation. He was released on the 24th and then on the 25th went to the emergency room at the Forest Park Hospital complaining that he couldn't breathe. Forest Park and Barnes Jewish are less than 2 miles from each other. So his instance of not being able to breathe at Forest Park was chalked up to an asthma attack, and he was released less than an hour later. Is that typical? If I'm having an asthma attack, will I be done within an hour and ready to go on my way?
So, some of you people that don't know me, I worked in a hospital setting since I was 14, 15 years old. It really depends. Like, if you walk into Altru and you think that you're going to get in and get out, a lot of the times that's not the case because you have to wait.
Forever
for a physician to come and see you, and typically there's a nurse that comes and sees you first, excuse me.
And Altru's not big either.
No, and Altru is not a huge hospital at all. And, you know, like, I guess if it's an emergency, if he came in and he was literally, like, grabbing his throat and could not breathe and struggling, and then they took his oxygen and figured out that he really wasn't breathing, then maybe it'd be more of an emergent situation. And then after finding out that he maybe has asthma or whatever the case may be, they can kind of just give you some albuterol and it's really quick relief and they can send you on your way. But who knows, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all. It's probably not that busy.
Right. And it's also 1999. So I don't know what is different.
Might not have even really been that advanced. And they might have just been like, okay.
Okay, that sucks. Lay down.
Yeah. Because now, like, you have to chart everything.
Right.
You know? As I'm sure, I don't know if you've ever had Amanda on the show before. I'm sure she'd love to tell you all the charting that she has to do.
I should have her on.
But all the charting that those nurses have to do is literally crazy. Everything you say, everything you do, all your stats, like, everything. It's nuts. I feel like you would get out of it this day and age, but, you know, maybe back then, 1999 or whatever the case was. I don't, you know, it's possible.
Ricky had also been scheduled for a few follow-up appointments at Barnes Jewish in relation to his two-day stay, but he would never make it to those appointments. Some reports state that he didn't leave the Forest Park Hospital after being released that evening. He was actually released, I think it was exactly 5:50 when he was released from his asthma attack. But some reports state that he slept in the waiting room and then waited to leave until morning. But I couldn't verify that information across sources, so I'm not 100% certain about that information.
I guess I could see, you know, he was homeless.
Right. He was homeless, and then also he was acting very erratic, said his girlfriend. So I think that if he actually did stay, it would definitely indicate that he was afraid of something or at least was needing a place to hide out.
Definitely. I mean, you know, there's security everywhere.
Right. And cameras. Well, 1999, I don't really know. But in the months following Ricky's death and dump, a criminal informant for the St. Louis police came forward to investigators about something suspicious he or she had heard. Obviously, we don't know if it's a man or a woman because they're protected. But apparently, a man by the name of Gregory Lamar Knox had admitted to the murder of a black man who he said worked at a gas station.
Perfect.
Does that sound familiar? So, according to Gregory, he had dumped the man's body near West Alton. I don't really know where this is, but I'm assuming somewhere off of Route 367.
Yeah.
Which is where his body was found.
Right. Okay.
Now, take a quick second, Kinsey, and I want you to guess who police linked Gregory Lamar Knox to.
The brother.
Yes.
The gas station.
Baha Hamdallah.
Baha, yes.
That's correct. So police began following both Baha Hamdallah and Gregory Lamar Knox. And although investigators were never able to get enough evidence to tie the two men to Ricky McCormick's death, they were able to arrest the two men on other charges.
Okay.
It's a start. Knox was arrested for drug trafficking, and he was believed to be connected to multiple other murders in the area.
Okay.
He was determined to be the number one narcotics supplier for a very large section of St. Louis as well, which is pretty big.
Sounds like a stand-up guy.
Yeah, I know. Hamdallah was arrested and convicted of first-degree murder after he shot a man in the face after an argument with a customer after he started managing a grocery store.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but you never really hear about anybody shooting someone in the face.
In the face. That's so personal.
That is so personal, so brutal. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but then, 4 years after he was convicted, he was granted a retrial. And in this trial, his argument was that of self-defense. And he ended up getting his conviction overturned and was released.
I don't like this police department. This is the third time just between those two coincidences.
Yeah.
Acquaintances. I mean, okay. Maybe they're in too, just like the Narcos show is.
Maybe. We don't really know. Ultimately, police could never find any evidence supporting the theory that Baha Hamdallah or Gregory Lamar Knox were ever involved in the death of Ricky McCormick. Both of them have been reached out to from police departments since and from investigative journalists. And especially now that Gregory Lamar Knox is in prison, a lot of journalists have reached out to him and asked him whether or not he was involved or to confirm or deny, you know, whatever. and he never has given any information to indicate that he may know anything about the murder or may be involved in any way, shape, or form. So, I mean, yeah, but he's already in jail for the rest of his life, or prison, I should say, for the rest of his life.
Oh, sorry, I must have missed that. But I mean, yeah, what would you do in that situation? Just out of curiosity, if you would have been in his shoes and say you did do it, what would you do if you knew you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail?
Well, I think whether or not they admit to the crime, it has a lot to do with whether or not they want the... I hate using this word because I'm not TikTok famous. But I feel like... I feel like most of the time when somebody in this situation, especially someone like Knox, who, you know, he's the number one narcotics supplier in a big section of St. Louis. He's arrested for drug trafficking. He's involved in lots of murders. I think it all has to come down to whether or not he wants to be,
blown up or like.
Well, you know, whether he wants the clout for the kill or not.
Okay, I can see that.
You know what I mean? Like, it has to do with, I guess it's a lot to do with ego.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And especially men like this, I feel like a lot of men who are involved, especially in narcotics, a lot of them have just massive egos and they will say or do anything to make themselves look better and look bigger and tougher and more boss, you know, whatever.
That, yeah.
But, yeah, so I don't know what I would do. I think in the first place, I probably wouldn't have killed a man, but...
Correct, yeah, I wouldn't be in it.
What would you do? I mean, you're
I
already in prison really for the rest of your life.
Really, really guilty conscience. So, I feel like as time would dwell on, I'd think, well, I'm already in jail anyway, and there's, like, somebody out there that probably loves the person that I killed, so...
Right.
I feel like I'd just fess up at that point because you're already in jail for the rest of your life. You're more than likely going to die in prison. So, yeah. I don't know. Just my guilty conscience, I think, would catch up to me and I'd just say it.
Yeah. I can see that.
If I was in a gang,
right.
Probably not.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's another thing is he could also be... maybe he's not directly the one who killed him, but maybe he was involved in new information and knew about another gang member... who may have actually done it or may actually know something about it, and he could just be protecting him. Also, if you hear sirens, it's the first Wednesday of the month. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Can you hear them?
No, I can't hear anything.
Oh, okay, cool. But yeah, that's just my guess. I don't know. Like I said, as far as forensic information and evidence, that would be probably the best way to determine who actually has done it, but we just don't have any access to that information.
Okay.
So Ricky McCormick now lies in an unmarked grave just a few miles from where his body was found, and his case remains open, unsolved. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Into the Bullpen Podcast, and thank you, Kinsey, for being with me remotely and recording this episode. It was a lot of fun, and I can't wait to do it again soon, hopefully. For those of you listening to this outro, I want you to know it is 4 days later. I have a severe sinus infection. I'm sitting down, I'm editing this episode, and I realized that I deleted the outro. So what you're getting, I understand, is subpar, but it is all that I have. It's so bad, you guys. I am so congested. Somebody please, please send help. But thank you guys for listening. As always, you can find photos and sources on the Facebook page. And make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening to this podcast. I also want to mention that there will be some updates coming soon. So if you're not already, of course, like and follow the Facebook page because more information is coming.